Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Ramblecast. I am your host, Chris Azzurano, and oh my god, the Canadians are coming! The Canadians are coming, because this week I am joined by Jerry once again.
We are taking over.
But this time we have a special guest, Sean Andrich from Gamers with Jobs.
We're going to burn down your other White House. It's time.
And here I thought you'd come with apologies and Tim Hortons.
No, we're all about burning the White House down now. I guess we'll wait. We'll wait and see how your next election goes, actually. Then we'll decide.
God.
You got one more chance. One.
Unless you send your president to us, then we're cool then. We like that guy.
Oh, yeah. Gosh. All right. So this week we're going to be discussing the Batman Arkham Knight game. It's going to be mostly spoilers, but before we get to that, I did want to have a moment to say a couple of words about Satoru Iwata. I know a lot of podcasts will have already discussed his passing at length, so I didn't want to go too much. I mean, at this point, a lot of people know his accomplishments. You've heard people that were closer to him, or even that actually got to meet him, give their little speeches. And oddly enough, there was a lot of stuff that I didn't know about him that I'm even learning. And, you know, it actually did hit me quite a lot, because he is quite a figure of Nintendo. He was the face of Nintendo, because not only does he do those Nintendo Directs, but recently, for things that I've been writing, I mean, I found his Iwata Asks series to be very informative, very good sources of research, and he's always come off, even in there, with a very casual attitude, very friendly. I mean, a lot of people have already pointed out he didn't seem like your typical kind of CEO, and I think even by Japanese standards, he very much didn't come off that way. So very, very different in those regards. So it is a shame. It is a sad passing. And I mean, there's a lot that could be said, and I've just always been terrible with words myself when it comes to this kind of thing. I've tried to write something up and I can't. I just, every time it feels either like it's not enough, disrespectful, or just completely pointless. But I do want to say, I think he really did set Nintendo up to be on a good track from here on. A lot of people I know don't think the Wii U was a good move. There's still lots of people that say, you know, oh, Nintendo doesn't get gamers. I disagree with a lot of that. But to me, I mean, the most recent example is the game Splatoon, where, you know, he helped cultivate like a whole bunch, like younger developers to come in and create this game that has that Nintendo feel, but it's so unlike anything Nintendo created before, and it's fantastic. I love it. It's a great game. And they've been doing, like, you read the Iwata Asks over A Link Between Worlds, and it was a similar deal. Eiji Aonuma oversaw it, but they had younger developers working on that game. So Nintendo, like, under Satoru Iwata, Nintendo was working to make sure, even like going forward, even far into the future, that the younger developers coming up not only had a chance, but understood what it means to develop a Nintendo game. So it is a shame that he is passed, but I think he really did steer Nintendo in a good direction that we're going to see his influence continue for years to come, at least. So Godspeed to Satoru Iwata. Thank you for doing what you did.
You're here.
Absolutely, yeah. I will say as well, not to do the self-promotion up front, but I did do two things for him, if it interests people at all. I did do a blog post on geekbravado.com talking about him in general. I kind of wrote that right away after I found out about his passing. And I also did a special retro flashback episode that was actually of... thanks to a friend of mine who helped me track this down, I actually did a video on the first game he ever released, which was actually for the Commodore PET of all things. It was a really, really basic car racing game that he did for a Japanese PET users club, actually. And I managed to track down a disc image for it and do a little video on that. It's quite fascinating to see where he started and where it came from, so... I did those two things. They're unmonetized and all that stuff, but I figured it would be an interesting little way to pay tribute to him. So if you want to see where he began, it's quite an interesting thing.
That's really cool. Yep. That's a great idea.
And in addition, I didn't get to tell you guys last week because we were off for a week. I was on an episode of The Magic Hour, done by friends of the show, Eugene Hua and Ryan and a couple other folks that are. It's an interesting show, more for parents than anything, but even regular gamers can enjoy it. I did an episode there, but their recent episode, which I was not on, was purely in memory of Satoru Iwata, and I feel like that was their best episode yet. I really enjoyed listening to that podcast, so check that out. Gamerparent.net, I believe, is where you can find a link, or just Google The Magic Hour Show podcast, and it'll probably be the first result. So,
cool.
All right, now then, Batman Arkham Knight. I actually have a blog post up with non-spoilery thoughts, so, I mean, basic summary is I think it is the best game in the series, but at the same time, kind of the worst Batman game in the series. So it's a mixed feelings kind of a thing. But you can check that out on my blog. But Jerry, Sean, I mean, what are your guys' overall feelings on the game?
I feel like Arkham Knight doubled down on a lot of things that people really enjoyed on the first in Batman. Certainly Arkham Asylum is, I think a lot of people, when you listen to podcasts, you live in the forums, a lot of people still say Arkham Asylum's kind of the one. And when they went to open world, which I think is just going along with what the market is kind of indicating, everybody wants to open things up. I think that they've really leaned into that as hard as I've seen them do it in Arkham Knight, and I think that they've mostly been successful with it, but they've also kind of made this Batman game feel a little bit overladen to me. It feels a little bit heavy with there's so many different modes of play, there's so many game mechanics, there's so many different button presses. Even forgetting about the Batmobile for a second, just. In a way, Arkham Knight, when I'm playing it and the way I think about it now that I'm done, it's a bit of a smear. Like, everything just kind of, like, it's like Batman under the vent. Like, he just goes so fast. Like, it doesn't make sense. You know, the combat is so slick. It's like nothing sticks. It's like Batman is Teflon. The whole game has a very Teflon feeling to me because it's just everything is made to, like, we want to flow, no resistance. And so everything you do, I feel so powerful. I don't feel any sense of danger, any sense of tension, any sense of stalking or causing fear. Like, there's none of that. I just feel like I feel like I'm just dragging my knuckles through the levels and beating the shit out of people is mostly what I've been doing. And they make you so good at that now. Which I guess is reflective of Batman's the late stage of his cycle. I kind of come out of it feeling like, yeah, that was pretty good, but it's in a way, I think that because it's so open, they had so many game modes, obviously they had so many people working on it. Their lack of limitation means that it's not as interesting to me because it's just they give you so many options all the time. It just kind of becomes a wash. Like, the enemies don't feel like they're in a position to really respond well when you could be hacking a drone, blowing up a wall, jumping out of the vent, swinging down from above, beating guys up. Like, it doesn't really force me to make hard creative decisions or to deal with AI that's making interesting reactions to my decisions. They're not equipped really to make those interesting. Like Arkham Asylum, those levels felt like a puzzle. And these ones, the way these levels are built, they just feel more like, it just feels more chaotic, fast, brutal, brawling stuff, and it kind of gets away from the things that I really enjoyed in the series.
Yeah, one thing I would actually say, I think part of that also lends itself to all of your abilities from Arkham City and everything are basically unlocked right at the get-go with just a handful of things kept behind. They don't really add much in that regard to your abilities. So if, like,
and many of them are powered up fully as well. Like the reach you have with the grapple right out of the gate is quite impressive.
So once you jump into the game, like, they don't hold your hand or nothing. They just, like, oh, you've played Batman before, so go and do all the things that Batman does. And it's like, wait, I forgot how you do that move where you, like, use the batarangs on the guys on the ground and knock them out immediately. Like, how do you do that? Where is it in the options? Like,
it's been a while.
So
They throw tooltips at you. Like, they really try, you know? And I never really felt like
The abilities that I don't want to use at that moment.
Well, not only that, it's even more so. It's kind of like playing. God, it's kind of like playing a Ratchet and Clank game. You have so many different weapons or so many different options. Eventually, you just start ignoring things. Like, yeah. I really didn't feel like, as a player, what really can kind of frustrate me in a weird way is that if I have all of these options, like all these different abilities, or when I'm in a big group battle, right, you can press these two buttons to do this or these two buttons to do that. It gets to a point where I have so many different toys to play with and so many different abilities to play with. I end up just like saying, I'm just going to do like these two things really well because it's good enough. Like I can handle punching, countering, dealing with the special enemies. Like my desire to get into contorting myself to use abilities and weapons that aren't really essential to be successful. My desire to actually delve into that stuff was pretty reduced, and in a way, it's kind of stifling.
Yeah, and partially because, again, like if you're coming right off of Arkham City or Arkham Origins, I imagine it's a lot easier because those games build up to it a little bit more gradually. Whereas here, it's just you're immediately thrown in, and I did find myself like ignoring some items, and then in certain fights where it's like really hectic and chaotic, I'd end up hitting the wrong button combination, getting the wrong gadget out because it's like you hit it in a panic. You just hit whatever button's closest to your thumb or something. So how about you, Jimmy? Yeah. What are your general thoughts?
Yeah, Sean covered a lot of it. I mean, I'm one of the people who, if I were to order, sort of put in order the Batman games that I like the most, the order I pick would probably raise an eyebrow with a lot of people, because I'm one of those who does think that Arkham Asylum is still sort of the gold standard. I actually liked Arkham Origins more than a lot of people did, and I played through Arkham City twice, and that one, it's like even the worst Batman game I still think is really, really good, but Arkham City ended up being my least favorite just because it felt a little clunkier to me. But yeah, this one is definitely the most fluid and the most polished in terms of its systems, but there are also a ridiculous amount of them at play, like Sean said, and it feels like there are a million different ways you can approach any scenario, which is cool, but I never really felt as if the game was forcing me to do so. Like almost any situation, even fairly large ones, I could just sort of, you could do things very stealthily and take out guys in a very strategic way if you wanted, but for the most part, you could just dive right in and beat the snot out of everyone and probably come out successful on the other side. You wouldn't get as much experience for it, but you never need it either. Like, by the end of the game, I was still a death machine, even though I did approach a lot of scenarios in a fairly straightforward way, and it just didn't feel like there was that level of challenge there. I've had a couple of friends who've actually been playing it on hard, and I don't normally play games on hard difficulty, but it kind of feels like this is one where that maybe really would have been the way to go in that regard. And I like the addition of the Batmobile, but I'm a little conflicted on it because it also feels like, in many cases, especially late game, it's not the most efficient way to get around the city, so I wouldn't use it in those cases. And it also feels like while they came up with a cool idea for the Batmobile, it also feels like they didn't know enough of what to do with it, which is why we'll get into this probably more in the spoiler section, but there are a lot of things involving the Batmobile that just feel very repetitive and filler-like, where you're just kind of like, well, we didn't really know what to do with it, but we spent all this time designing it, so we're going to put you in these scenarios that, when you think about them, don't really make a lot of contextual sense, but, you know, you got to do more stuff with this thing.
Well, in my case, a last-minute villain addition that turns out to just be a repeat of, like, the second-to-last, like, boss villain battle.
Mm.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys know who I'm talking about.
I know you're talking about, which I guess we can do the spoiler thing for that whole thing.
But. Yeah, that'll be. There'll be a few. There's a few things with that. And the biggest problem I had with this as well, and again, this will just be a top-down thing, but I found, and I'm curious if I'm just forgetting things, which we'll do in the spoiler section, but I also found that the plots in these games, I mean, they're sort of like comic book fare. They're never very, very complex, but I found that in the second half, there were several points and events that happened where I was kind of like, wait a minute, like, it felt like there was some major it felt like there were some major plot holes to me that were, that I can only, that I, when I looked at it, I was like, I can only assume that because this game was delayed for so long, there were either sections that were cut out or something else, because there was a couple of points later on where I'm like, I'm either forgetting something that happened before, or this doesn't make any sense at all.
Probably both.
Yeah, well, and it's, to me, it's terrifying to think that they cut things out, because as I was playing through, just through the main story, at some point I was like, why didn't you just skip this? Or why didn't you truncate this? Because
it's still going.
My God, how many times does the bad guy need to slip through Batman's grasp? I mean, that's the other part of this thing, this whole idea of Batman being a detective, being a really smart dude. You spend the entire game being a fucking idiot. It's like playing Max Payne 3 again. Like, I spent the whole time going like, you're so stupid. Why are you doing that? Like, I spent the whole time
watching. I am not a detective. I know exactly what to do here, and yet you don't.
And so it's a very video gamey video game. Batman always has been to a degree, but as the scope of it and as the city of it has grown, I think the incongruities have grown a lot with it, and because everything needs to be bigger and bigger, and Batman isn't necessarily as a hero and as a story driver, Batman has not necessarily been the bigger and bigger and more epic world beating problem kind of guy, and the stuff that they get into, there's a lot of hand waving and a lot of like, shrug comic book logic to some of the major points and motivating factors in the story.
And also just justification for things. But so basically, I think all in all, we're all kind of agreed that it is a enjoyable game, but it does suffer a lot from sequel glut, in that they just could not resist the urge to put more and more and more in and make things bigger and bigger, when perhaps that was not the best choice. Because as we, like, I know from my setting at least, the reason why I really like Arkham Asylum, aside from just a love of the Metroid-ish, Resident Evil type of location-based game design, is just that everything was so much more tightly focused. All the villains kind of served some part of the story. It wasn't hours wandering around trying to figure out where the next Riddler thing was. And it was just, everything felt like it was to a purpose.
Nothing in that game felt like padding to me.
Yeah.
Or very, very little of it, if anything.
And that game also felt, and I think that this is something that I'm noticing more and more, and it's usually more apparent in Ubisoft games, but like Arkham Asylum felt like the entire game was designed by one team, consistently all the way through. So it's got a really strong through line. And Arkham Knight especially, and the Arkham City had this a bit as well, Arkham Knight definitely feels like multiple completely disparate teams working on completely disparate aspects of the game, and so it doesn't have that same internal consistency, which I think is actually really, really important to maintain a good flow and something that feels connected and meaningful.
Yeah, and I think it's funny you mentioned Ubisoft, because one of the things I will say about this game as well is that this game has a lot of UB Tower equivalents in it. nothing that's a direct analog to that, but there are a lot of side activities in this that feel like do this very similar task X number of times in a row to get bits, and I still did it all because I'm an idiot. But
told you shouldn't. I told you the true ending wasn't going to be worth it. I mean,
I didn't. I haven't done all the Riddler stuff. I got the whole middle ending, but I'm pretty sure I know what the true ending is. I haven't actually looked it up, but I'm pretty sure I know.
We'll talk about it because I bet you don't.
And I think, like, just before we kind of get into spoilers, my overall impression of Batman Arkham Knight is that it is a great Batman game, and it's a great game in the vein that they started, and I think it's a great conclusion to that game and that gameplay that they began. It passes through me like Chinese food. Like, I don't think it went down. I ate a lot of it, and I'm done with it now, and I probably won't be thinking about it by the time the end of the year comes around and I'm thinking about what the best games were. And as much as I like good buddy Jess McElroy and what they do over at Polygon, that review was out of control positive. It was Justin and I are usually in pretty close accord, but on this one it was, I thought it was good, but I did not think it was a 10 out of 10 by any stretch.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I still enjoyed it a lot. Like I said, you know, if I were to rank the four core Batman titles, like even the worst one is still very good. But yeah, by the end of it, I was glad to see it finally wrapping up. And I do, like Rocksteady says, this is the last in their Batman trilogy. I can't imagine Warner Brothers will just let this be the last Batman game, but I'm sure it'll be the last one that they work on. And I'm glad that team is going to have, because they are some hyper talented people over there. So I am very anxious to see what they do next. Even if it's another superhero game, if it's a different superhero game that they can do a whole other spin on, I think that will be very interesting. I'm still looking forward to that.
Yeah, given Warner Brothers Yang for putting out licensed properties, you can almost guarantee it'll be coming out of the stable. It's not going to be an original something made from whole cloth, that's for sure.
Yeah, I doubt it.
Well, Warner Brothers doesn't own Rocksteady, do they?
Yeah, they do.
Oh, they do?
Yeah.
They
do. They've owned them since, I think after the first, I think after Asylum is when they bought them, or maybe even before then. But they've owned them for a long time.
Yeah, it was in and around Asylum's launch, I think. And yeah. It's so funny to me, too, because their first game was freaking Urban Chaos.
Yeah. Their entire catalog is Urban Chaos and Batman games.
Yeah.
That's so weird, because I feel like everyone thought... I was under the impression, like, I should have done my research. I thought Arkham Asylum was their first big game as, like, a studio...
Urban Chaos Riot Response, no one really paid any attention to.
It wasn't even very good. Like, that's the thing. Like, when they announced, like, the guys who made Urban Chaos Riot Response are making a Batman game, it was like just, oh good, another.
Well, it's
going to
be
Batman.
Another cruddy Batman game.
I guess all it's going to be. Because before Rocksteady, Batman games were not good.
No, they
had a really bad run of Batman games.
No, they weren't. They were not very good
at all. That's what kind of really put them on the map, is this developer who only made one game that no one really cared about, took on a franchise that was normally Poison and made it amazing, and everyone was like, whoa.
All right, we got to get the spoilers, though. So for those of you that are going to be cutting out, just... quick links. You can find more of Sean at www.gamerswithjobs.com. If you're not listening, you should really subscribe to the Gamer with Jobs conference call. I imagine most of you listening probably are like already know about it. But Jerry, you can find more of his stuff at geekbravado.com. Links to his YouTube channel there, and me. Gamertag.net, youtube.com/ramblepack64. I still have that Metroid Other M video. It just surpassed 400 views.
Nice.
And,
good job.
I
always like to think about, like, when I look at something like that, I always like to think about, because, like, on the internet, we can kind of lose our sense of scale, right? Like, I always like to think about, what if I had all those people in the room at the same time watching this? And of a sudden, it's like, 400, holy, like,
that's actually, like, a lot of people.
That's a huge deal. Like, that's a model theater.
I guarantee you, though, if I look at the analytics, a lot of that 400 will end up walking out throughout the entire thing.
How does YouTube, it's a total tangent, do they count a view just the click, or do they count it when you've watched
it?
And
it has to be a
certain
percentage of the video, but it's a secret what that percentage is.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
But they'll still tell you, if you go into the analytics, it's like, here's like how many people watched like a minute, 20 some seconds. Here's how many people watched like five minutes. And usually the people with the longest attach rate for my videos are like from Russia and stuff. So that's kind of interesting.
That is interesting.
So I always said, if I'm going to get closed captioning or subtitles in all my videos, it's going to be in Russian first.
Damn right.
But anyways, you can find that. And of course, facebook.com/ramblepack64. If you have feedback, I mean, there's a good place to let us know. So, all right. So otherwise, I mean, we're going to be getting to spoilers now. So bye to all those that don't want to know anything, and to all those that do. All right. I guess the first thing I wanted to talk about is Rocksteady completely trolled everyone with the death of Oracle. Or rather, the not death of Oracle. And I actually kind of find that amusing. And yet I also feel like it's them shooting themselves in the foot twice. Because I totally did not buy the death of... Well, I did not buy into the emotional weight of the death of Oracle the first time, because I was too busy thinking... I don't know, that was very anticlimactic. It also felt very silly. Like,
well, especially given how much bullshit... Like, again, like this whole thing, all of the plot points... are predicated on you doing like five things three times each before you get there. So by the time I'm there, I'm just like, fine, just kill her. Like, can we do something else? Like, can we move this plot forward in some meaningful way? Go ahead.
I was actually hoping when she shot herself, in a weird way, like, I was actually hoping that that was real, because I was like, wow, that's a very, you know, brave, bold, dark direction to take this. Like, that's actually not something you would expect. And I'm like, wow, Rocksteady said this was the last one, and they're doing, and I'm like, good on them. And I was like, but I bet it's not going to be the case. And nope, yeah. Totally wasn't.
I was curious about that as well, but, I mean, because this was right after Batman took in the Scarecrow gas, wasn't it? Like, I mean, that's when you started seeing Joker and everything.
Yeah, it was around then.
I feel like that was like, you know, he had the Joker DNA in him, but then it was catalyzed by Scarecrow's toxin. And then, you know, yeah, he starts to see stuff, which begs to mind. I mean, you're talking about plot holes. Didn't Scarecrow know what Batman was seeing? Like, I mean, maybe I should go back and watch that scene again, but parts of it sound like it made sense. Like, a lot of people mentioned, you know, the bullets in the glass line up with the guy in the beginning, because that was where they captured Poison Ivy earlier.
Yep.
And this dead body would still be in there. So that stuff technically would fit in. But I feel like maybe Scarecrow was talking about, like, can you save Oracle kind of a thing, or can you save Barbara?
Yeah.
I feel like. And it's like, well, how do you know what he's seeing in there? Like, how do you know what he's seeing? How do you know what he's looking at?
Yeah. I mean, his idea is supposed to be that, I guess their justification for that is that he understands his toxin will make you play out or feed on your greatest fears. So I guess maybe just based on what he knew about Batman and some of his relationships, he just kind of gathered, sure, well, if I set up this scenario, this is likely how it will play out for him.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
and that's kind of how he understood.
Arguably, Scarecrow nattering on and on throughout the city on giant invisible projectors on buildings and things, talking about that, you could arguably say, well, he keeps laying all these seeds into Batman's feared mind that it just kind of propagates,
he's
right?
Trying to lead him.
But again, like, it's so unpredictable, and obviously he didn't know about the Joker stuff because he was always surprised by it when it came up. Is there some point in the earlier games, because it's been a while since I played them, like, does Batman have Joker blood in him? How did that happen?
That was Arkham City. Joker traps him very early on when you first meet Joker in Arkham City. He traps him, and that's his, because remember, he's got, like, the Titan formula from Arkham Asylum.
So he was dying
from it. And so he injects Batman and sends his blood samples out to several hospitals, which is how he has the quote-unquote five patients within the Bonesa Studios. So that's where he gets the Joker toxin inside of himself.
That's right.
Well, okay. I mean, the Joker thing is kind of the big spoiler that you don't want to talk about in reviews and anything. That's the big twist. That's the big, you know, the whole, like, well, how are they going to take this big seminal villain and keep him out of this game where he's obviously dead, like, in the fire, face melting off, dead? How are you going to get Joker back into this thing? And they did it. I thought it was actually a really great turn. I thought that was a really great way to get that character back into the story in a way that made, you know, comic book sense.
You know, I actually really liked it, too. I'm the kind of person that's like, look, we get it. Joker's a great villain, yada, yada. Can we please move on to someone else? And even here, I was actually really, really digging the way they did Joker here.
I guess here's a question for you both based on that. Is, I've heard sort of two schools of thought on the reintroduction of Joker, which is that most people seem to agree that the way they brought him back was pretty cool, but the whole number of situations where the Joker shows up and yaks at you for a while, and people seem to, the two schools of thought seem to be that people really like that for the times it happened because, it really helped paint an extra layer of context over things. And other people thought that they did it too often and that he got to the point where he was kind of annoying you. And I was initially I kind of felt that way. And then by the end, I was kind of like, I actually kind of like this because it's supposed to be the effect, especially with how you end up dealing with Joker and sort of shutting him out of your mind at the end. I'm like, it's supposed to be Joker kind of trying to rile you up because it's supposed to be this thing pushing on you. And I'm wondering, do you think they overdid that a little bit, or did they do a good amount of it?
I think that they did it enough, only because Batman sidekicks are usually there because Batman is just a frickin' bore, even at the best of times. In this game, he's a total bore. Like, he's such a boring character. He's so flat. He's so emotionless, and he has very little to say. And he's not even responsive to what the other characters are saying to him. It's like I don't know what is going on with Batman in this game. I did not like Batman. I thought Batman was just boring. Like, I felt bad controlling him in a way. And so having Joker there be kind of this complete, like, Joker's a sidekick in this game. And so he provides the color that Batman, like, it's almost like Batman, they flattened him out even more to make the contrast between him and Joker all the more stark, even though obviously the Joker doesn't need help. I kind of liked the twist of just having Joker's commentary throughout as just like a color commentator. So as far as I was concerned, I was always happy to see him because he was going to make these alone times with Batman bearable, because Batman had nothing interesting to say, and the people he's talking to on the radio would be saying is like, "Let us help you, let us in," and he's like, "Tell me where to go next." It's just like, it's so boring.
I bought this.
So having Joker there to at least like give some flavor, I thought it was a great balance.
I noticed at some point, and maybe it was because I was actually using the Batmobile to travel between islands more often, but I noticed during certain points of the game, Joker would actually appear so rarely that I'd be like flying over buildings and suddenly I'd be like, "So Brucey boy," and it's like, "Whoa, oh hey, yeah, there you are."
Oh, that's right, so, that guy, I'm still insane, that's right.
Yeah, so yeah. I think in some points of the story, I think they had him there more often, and other points they kind of pulled back. But that could just be maybe the way I was playing was changing. Maybe I was spending less time on rooftops. So
yeah, I like, a lot of it was really obviously very tied to main plot points. So like main story beats that they knew the player was going to hit. A lot of that stuff seemed to be centered around that, which makes sense to me. I wonder, because I think I remember you, maybe it was something you were tweeting or somewhere where you're kind of, or maybe it's in the forums on DWJ, but you're saying that you spent a lot of time doing Riddler stuff.
Yes.
Like, you spent a lot of time doing side stuff. Like, my flow with these games, because I'm always paranoid about not having certain abilities made available to me, right, that only unlock through story. Like, Assassin's Creed is really bad for that. Like, Assassin's Creed, if you don't get to this point in the story, you're not going to get the boat. You're not going to get the ship. You're not going to get a cool new way to, like, move around the world. So I was pretty story-focused for the first half of the plot, I would say, before I really started getting into side stuff that wasn't incidental to what I was doing otherwise. So I saw the Joker a lot on a really steady drip for the most part.
Yeah, that was my case as well. I ended up doing a bunch of side stuff, and then a bunch of it gets locked off until you open up all the islands, and you don't actually open up all the islands until a decent chunk into the plot. So
yeah.
I sort of dug hard into that. So I was like, all right, let's get all these islands opened up. And yeah, for that, I ran into him quite a bit. And I do like the fact that he will always appear at certain key points in the plot, but I also did like the fact that he would, and I don't know if these were scripted to appear where they did or if it was just good timing, but sometimes you would just be grappling around the cities on the rooftops and you pull up a building and you'd crest the roof of the building and he'd just be like, "Hey," and he'd sort of jump in your face and start talking to you. And I was like, that's kind of neat, because at least it felt like it was just sort of randomly choosing when to do that. That was kind of cool. I like
it. Was a bit dynamic, because I got that once and I figured it was just a joke off of the way Man-Bat's introduced.
Oh, God, that Man-Bat.
Yeah, that freaked me the hell out. I was like, Jesus!
Yeah. What do you guys think of, like, the side stuff? One of the most frustrating ones, because I was talking before about there's so many times where Batman, just by virtue of the story, like, how many times does he have to almost kill somebody, almost capture somebody? Like, the Man-Bat, Firefly, like all of, or is the name Firefly? Is that the right name?
Yes, Firefly's the right one. Yeah,
it's like, I got him. Ah, I guess I'm gonna need to get him again because it's the rule of three. So like Firefly specifically, like, it just, like, talk about filler. That is pure grade A
Firefly
filler.
You would catch him and then he would blast away from you, except the one time he didn't for some reason.
Yeah.
That was
yeah.
basically it. And yeah, and the Man Bat thing was just like, okay, that was kind of neat because it started off with you having to synthesize the Remedy for him and learning about his backstory as a result, which I liked. But then after that, it was just catch him, stab him. Oh, it wasn't enough. I got to do it again. And then that was it. And I'm like, couldn't have done something else with that.
I didn't mind Man Bat for the most part because it was always very easy. Because I just like the first round, I found him very easily because they kind of tell you where he is. Round two was right after a story point. I turned, like, I have detective vision. I looked to my left, and there he is. So I was like, oh, well, that's easy. So it was just the third round where I just randomly heard him on the radio and had to actually find him. So, I mean, it wasn't too bad, and it was just a... I mean, for me, that's where the open world stuff comes to, where I kind of have a dream Batman game, which is no main narrative, just like... Think of it like I guess the closest I could think of is a sort of free to play, but not because I don't know. Just here's Gotham. We release content like every once in a while, new DLC, new missions, and just new like okay, this week I'll be grabbing Two-Face as he robs a bank. I'll be chasing after the Penguin doing whatever he's doing. I'll be chasing Fire like all this stuff, and then you add like here's a Poison Ivy mission, only not this time, not anymore. Here's a ventriloquist and Scarface mission. Here's a Clayface mission. Solomon Grundy. Like, just add in that content where it's like during the night, like you are the Batman hunting down criminals, kind of a thing. Like,
putting them in jail in a way.
Putting them in jail, yeah,
for a while till they get.
Where they're
out.
Guaranteed to get out again because this is the cycle of Gotham.
Yeah,
but it's like, I mean, that's the stuff that I really like because that's the stuff that kind of felt Batman. I mean, yeah, going into the Batman. This is the first time as Batman you stop a bank heist.
Yeah,
it's like that actually feels fitting. It feels like okay, now I am the Batman, but half of it didn't really feel like that at all because a lot of the missions were, I mean, yeah, like the thing with Firefly is it's very early on in the game and it's before you have a chance to really get used to how does the Batmobile control, and it turns out it controls like the Warthog from Halo in a bit, only the Warthog's in a very big open environment, and here it's like, now this narrow alleyway, and here's a U-turn, and it's
I didn't really have much trouble with it, especially after I switched the controls and the options, which, mind-boggling to me, they kind of buried that. Like, you had to hear, somebody had to tell you, basically, to know to go and change it so that, you know, one triggers gas, one triggers brake. That made a big difference. I never had any fails. I thought that was a good idea.
The defaults for that is just
The weird thing is, I actually didn't switch over at all, and I got used to it still. You know what though? I imagine if you're using a controller, though, would the brake even be pressure sensitive? If you switch that way,
you could kind of feather it a little bit. I don't know. I couldn't tell you. Just in terms of just raw feel, like in terms of bringing skills you already have from other video games, it felt a lot more natural to do it that way.
Did you played it on PC, right, Sean?
Yep.
All right, you played it on PS4, Jerry?
Yeah.
All right, because I'm not sure. Like, I imagine you played with the control pad. Did you play with the control pad on PC?
Yeah, on the 360 pad, yeah.
All right, so the gas pedal was still pressure sensitive to how you were pulling the trigger?
I think so. Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, definitely for the gas, yeah.
Definitely for the gas, because that's what I'm wondering, because maybe they did that, like, if you switched it out the other way, that's how they did it with the brake. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, maybe there was some reason they play-tested it and people wanted it, like, all the way on or something. I don't know.
I'm not sure what their thinking was. It felt like it was just the wrong decision. It wasn't the right call. It worked better the other way. The Batmobile stuff, like, I'm trying to think of high moments with the Batmobile. What were moments? Like, there was definitely some. I think the first time I used the grappling hook to solve a puzzle. It's during that assault on Ace Chemical, I think, is kind of one of the first times you need to use the Batmobile to pull the elevator up.
Yeah.
You grapple on a thing and then you pull the elevator. Like, to me, I was like, oh, so this isn't just a way for me to drive around and quote unquote not kill and shoot guys, but I can actually use this on the environment and do puzzly things. I thought that was really great. Like, I really enjoyed those times when they really brought the Batmobile into a puzzle.
No, I actually really like that stuff too. And that's like, even towards the end of the game where you have to, you know, like lower the Batmobile on a winch and have Batman fly around, do things, and then have the Batmobile do... Like, I liked when the Batmobile was involved in puzzle solving and stuff. I think for me, where it really did not feel like a Bat... Like, I loved the tank fights. It didn't feel... It felt like another game, in a sense.
Yeah.
It felt like another like a mini game from another title or something, and it was a lot of fun, but it's definitely a part where it's like, I'm not Batman right now. I'm someone else.
Well, it was fun the first four or five times. Yeah. Yeah. The other problem. Like,
by the end of the game, where you're fighting 50 friggin' tanks.
By the end of the game, I'm just so done with it. It's so not fun anymore. And they don't, and unlike Batman and all his powers and abilities, I don't feel like the Batmobile's RPG path of skills and effects is nearly as satisfying. The Batmobile stuff in the beginning of the game feels very similar to the Batmobile stuff at the end.
That's the advantage of doing a lot of the side content, because a lot of that feels a lot more spread out when you're doing it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Then, because by the end of the game, it feels like most of the story missions are really trying to emphasize the Batmobile, get you to use it a lot, and they are almost trying to justify its presence. Because then, as we said, I hated the Cyclops fights. Like, they were supposed to be similar to the Prey, like when you're Batman sneaking around. They're like an equivalent version of the Batmobile, but you don't have the information you had when you're, Batman's detective vision. You don't have the advantage of environment and mobility in comparison. It ends up being a much greater pain because you're not sure when two of the vehicles are going to cross over or not. It takes so long to lock on.
I liked those fights. I liked them. Yeah, because I'd use the boost. I'd be boosting around corners and just slowly creeping up behind them. I enjoyed it a few times. I enjoyed it a handful of times, right? Yeah. When I play a video game and they introduce this new, that Cyclops fight's a good example. The games I like the most are games that are going to do that once, right? The games that aren't going to stick with me are the ones who are we figured out this thing, so we're going to do that about 8 times at least, right? I love it when a game throws a mechanic at you and then never brings it back. Like Bayonetta does a really great job with some of that. There's
Bayonetta does a lot of games that
do a really good job of introducing a mechanic and then moving you on to something else that's also cool. And in this, everything overstays its welcome, especially if you do the side stuff, but even in the main story.
Because then they introduce Deathstroke, and I'm expecting, this time they're going to set it right, because the fight with Deathstroke last time really sucked. Now I'm going to get a real fight, and no. I just got to follow him around in the tank and shoot him up, and it's actually easier.
And he's so offhand. By the time he shows up so late in the game, I'm like, oh, we're bringing someone else in now? Oh, this will be I'm sure this will be a satisfying story beat.
Yeah.
After I've had the Arkham Knight slip through my fingers saying, not yet, Batman, and then leaving.
Yeah. Over and over and
over. Over and over. Or the Deus Ex Machina, Batman's fear juice kicking in when a bad guy needs to disappear. Or something like
Here's
that.
Here's a question I wanted to ask you guys, actually. This is shifts gears slightly, but you brought up the fear talks, and now this is either a massive gaping plot hole or I'm forgetting something, and it's quite possibly the latter. But so when you first get exposed to Scarecrow's fear toxin early in the game, which you get exposed to it enough that you're still largely in control, but you've got Joker talking in your head on a regular basis, and it's made very clear when you get that even a little bit is bad, but you get exposed to it for any more than probably a few minutes and you'll be basically permanently psychologically busted. So the cloudburst goes off at one point, covers the entire city in a multi-foot layer cloud of this stuff for what in game time is probably hours, in terms of the universe, by the time you finally get rid of it. Everyone is absolutely batshit loco while that's going on, as you would expect, and then you blow up the cloudburst, you use the plants to get rid of the toxin, and everybody's fine again. Am I missing something?
Well, because they went to higher ground. Everybody who's fine also went to higher ground. And then they all did their kind of bad guy mating rituals to produce more bad guys.
When the cloud clears, there's still tons of bad guys everywhere. Everyone's back driving around cars on the road.
And they're like,
all the
weird,
mission
huh?
characters are back. And I'm this toxin actually doesn't seem that useful.
The cloud burst, it wasn't as concentrated as when he does it directly. I think it was a lighter version. That's why everybody's violent instead of just pissing themselves.
You still needed two massive skyscraper plants to clear the air out, but parts per million, it was still light enough.
The thing to remember is, or at least I think, like Ace Chemicals was supposed to be like his big plan, and you got rid of most of like I don't remember.
Well, that's true, because you do the thing where you're not diluting the toxin, but neutralizing a lot of it in the plant. Yeah. So maybe you've severely weakened it at that stage.
A majority of the stuff you're doing doesn't end up mattering at all. Ace Chemical doesn't matter. Like every time you stop our Arkham Knight, doesn't matter. You go and stop this ski, like you prevent, you go and deal with Penguin, doesn't matter. Like so many things that you do in this Batman game ultimately don't matter. Right up to the very end where you just like, all right, you got me, I give in. All right, Scarecrow, I give in. The only time Batman actually gets ahead of anybody is at the very, very end when he goes deep inside himself. And he basically excises Joker from his system from within. That's the first time Batman actually, like, takes control and actually does something proactive.
It's actually absolutely to the world. That sequence, to me, felt a lot... I got the same, like, this is awesome from that Joker sort of exorcism sequence as I did from those Scarecrow missions in Asylum, where it was just so different from everything else, and you're like, this is just so... neatly put together, and like the visual tricks they pull, and the moments where you're actually playing as Joker, and like every time you turn around, there's another stone Batman in the frame and stuff like that. I was like, this is some of the stuff I love the most about Asylum, and that was really great.
Rocksteady can do insanity as a story, man. Like that's the one thing they know how to do as an in-game narrative is insanity. Because I still remember the first time I saw a billboard with Joker on it, I didn't realize. Like I was literally turning my head, the camera was going, and I just quartered my eye. I was like, "Wait a minute!" Then I tried to bring it back in frame, and it was Johnny Charisma, and I'm like, "Wait a minute!
Yeah,
wait a minute!"
Stuff like they do so well, and I kind of wish, maybe not to that degree, but I do wish that there was more stuff like that in this, because they can really do that exceptionally well. And that was definitely one of my favorite parts of the story, was that. And the way in which you actually excise him, when, you know, you get him into the cell and you actually see Joker like begging, going like, "I need you," as you send the thing away. I was just like, "Oh, this is good."
That was actually a great moment, I think, for me. And it's like, for something like that, I think I can understand why Mark Hamill return for the role, because it is actually a very good, because I mean, with that, after I beat the game, I had to sit down and really think about what they were trying to do with the story this time around, because I mean, Arkham City feels rather disjointed in a lot of ways, because you're bouncing between a lot of stuff, and it has two villains working seemingly different ends. You got the Joker and Dr. Hugo Strange under the tutelage of Ra's al Ghul. And so you have two villains with completely different goals doing all this stuff, and it's like, okay, what is this game really about? Which is like, Arkham Asylum is very simple. It's like, what is this game really about? Well, it's technically just Batman stopping Joker, but in the greater scheme of things, you can really see that the entire series is building up to, what does it take to break Batman? And Arkham Knight really does conclude that, because everything really is about, what is Batman's limits as a human being? Like, what is Scarecrow's goal in this entire game? It is to reveal, like, to destroy the symbol, the demigod symbol that is Batman, and reveal him to be nothing but a human being. Because human beings all have limitations. They're all mortal. He is just a mortal man. But as a symbol, he is immortal. And you kind of get that, because, like, everyone, the thugs aren't afraid of, like, Nightwing or anything. They're not afraid of Robin. Like, when you listen to them throughout the game, they're doing nothing but smart-ass, like, comments. Like, no one's really afraid of them. Like, they're afraid of Batman. Batman is immortal in that sense. And Scarecrow wants to ruin that. Arkham Knight naturally wants his revenge, but what Joker is using Arkham Knight for is, and what Arkham Knight is trying to do also, is just, in his way to get revenge, he wants to put everyone Batman knows in danger. And what Joker just wants to do is push Batman to the limits and finally make him kill. And the only person that really got to Batman ever was the Joker. So what it really is three completely different villains that seem to be working at completely different ends. But all what the entire story is, will Batman break? And Bruce Wayne, I think, finally does hit his limit. That's what it is. It's like he is retiring as Batman. He has hit his limit. You know, the Joker dying, like, did it for him. Like, he finally needed to kill the Joker mentally, spiritually, emotionally. If not, you know, because he didn't do it. Like, even if he did it physically, like, inside of him, the Joker was still alive. The Joker was still haunting him, and he needed to kill that. But the thing is, it took a lot of thinking on how does all of this relate to each other, because then you're cutting through clone Jokers. You're cutting through the Cloudburst. You're cutting through Jason Todd's everything. Like, there are moments in the game where it really does work together, like all the flashbacks to Jason Todd being tortured. And then there are moments where it just doesn't work at all. And I think for me, that's where the story is like, again, like it's like, oh, it's a great Batman story. It's kind of a really terribly constructed and put together story.
God, I mean, we're on a podcast type of video game, so I don't mind nerding, being really nerdy, but, you know, when Bilbo Baggins said he feels like butter spread too thinly over bread, like, I feel like it's the same kind of thing. Like, there is a good, in the core, even philosophically, there is a really good, strong Batman story here, but it's spread over this sprawling thing. The center cannot hold. Like, the whole edifice of it can't make this what could be, like, in an Arkham Asylum sense, a really nice, tight narrative that plays off each other and is great metaphorical and everything else that they're doing. And it just spread over, trying to, like, pull it like taffy over so many different aspects and so many elements that, again, like, all of these themes aren't – they're explored over the span of so long. And there are so many times with Arkham Knight where you could – you could close off at least one of the beats in that narrative, because Batman spends like 85% of the game not even knowing who the Arkham Knight is, and with Alfred spinning his wheels trying to figure out who it is. Like, that's not satisfying. All the satisfying stuff is like on the back end of that whole story, and it's just pent up. Like, it doesn't have the pacing that is a good narrative arc needs, because everything it feels like they just felt like they had to pad and pad and pad and pad, so it just goes on and on and on. So what are really interesting arcs end up they're just too far apart.
It's a shame, because I actually really enjoyed the introduction of the Arkham Knight at Ace Chemicals, where he's pretty sure he has Batman trapped, you know, and some of his dialogue there, you can see his conceit in a lot of other stuff, but also he does feel a few times is a more visible threat, but then towards the end, it's like, okay. It's like, I stopped you this time. Would you just take that damn mask off?
I know you're Jason Todd. Especially if you do the side things and you're dismantling the bombs, and every time it's like, oh, he got us. We've lost another Rattler. And he's like, come on, I trained you guys. And it's, you hear this conversation over and over. Like, say what you will about Batman, they really, really strain to, in this open world with all these side things you do, they really strain to keep the villains in your periphery at all times. They're always talking at you during things. Yep. They're always talking. Everybody's got access to some citywide PA system at some point. I mean, we haven't even talked about the Riddler and all his nonsense yet. But like, they strain and strain, but the problem is they're in a weird stasis. So, like, the Arkham Knight, before we know who the Arkham Knight is, he really only has a set amount of things that he can really talk about that's going to be okay within that part of the narrative. And that part of the narrative, for a player, can it last for 20, 30 hours. So you've got a guy who Batman's like, who is this guy? And Arkham Knight is like, damn it, you incompetents, kill him. It's just, it becomes very Scooby-Doo. Like, it becomes very, very not unsatisfying. And that's just the peril of doing an open world game like they did here.
It really is. It feels like they should at least close it. Or, you know what, when you bring up the, even the dialogue where it's like, you know, oh, I trained you guys. Like, they could have at least done something like Spec Ops The Line, where in Spec Ops The Line, at the early parts of the game, they're all shouting very professionally, like, you know, target down or something like that. And then, you know, he's like, oh, weapons jammed when he reloads. And then at the very end, it's something like, got you, fucker. And it's like, oh, damn it, when the gun jams. Like, it's got all this, like the dialogue changes to reflect what's going on with the characters. And they could easily do that with your progress here. And they kind of do it with the Joker a little bit. But mostly when you're getting closer towards the end of the remaining trophies. Mm-hmm. It's that's the closest thing you actually have to legit response to your progress.
I think that, and like trophies, the whole Riddler thing, I think that the Riddler had a, just because it's almost like they said it's a big open world, which villain is going to have the most like justifiable reason to be inhabiting this world? It's the Riddler. So... It is really emblematic of how over the top they were, how overstuffed this game is. The Riddler, the whole thing, you got Catwoman who's been captured, of course, because you need to have a damsel. There she is. And then you got to do all these Riddler puzzles, and half of the puzzles are racetracks.
His fucking Oh, I almost broke a controller with the last one of those. I was getting so mad at those.
It's
things.
A puzzle, Bat. It's like no. It's, well, a it's not even that.
It's
challenge.
It's not even the racetracks. It's like there was one trophy in particular that you got to go from behind GCPD to the center of Founders Island. In like 40 seconds.
Yes.
And I finally figured out there's like a shortcut, and then once you get onto Founders Island, the GPS wants you to go the absolute wrong direction to go. And like there's so much like, okay, I've done this 10 times. Let me actually observe the path, and then okay, now that I know what to do, I just got to do it another 10 times to finally get the timing right.
Yeah.
It took I mean, I enjoyed it sort of. Like, that was, like, I think the worst actual trophy to collect for me. But, yeah, like, then when it came to the racing, and again, like, the racing was also a lot of... I thought if you needed to do a wall in general, you had to hit that boost. You don't want to hit the boost if you hit a wall.
No.
So it's a lot of learning the specifics, and there's no real lesson in that. It's like, all right, you're in the Batmobile. You've driven this before, right? You've driven cars. You know how they work. Go up that wall.
I mean, honestly, the biggest thing with that was not that the courses were frustrating so much. It was that because I if I had to retry it a lot, that wouldn't bother me so much. It's the fact that I get why they didn't do this, but it would have made it so much less frustrating is if when you knew you boned up a lap, if they just gave you a reset button that took you back to the start of the lap instead of making you finish the rest of the lap and then start it over again. I was just like, fuck you! Like, why?
I could have sworn on Condemned I finally discovered a retry button.
Yeah.
I could have sworn on Condemned I did because well, no, when you're doing, yeah,
I think when you're doing it as like the AR challenge version of
nope,
it, you can reset.
Even I did during not the story do the one? AR challenge of Condemned. Oh. You can't say fuck that shit.
No, yeah. I'm pretty sure I had to drive through every time, but I may have just missed it. Like I
mean,
had to drive
if there was a button, there may have been, and it just purposely didn't explain it to you. But the way I just assumed that it because the way he would taunt you and say, "Oh, you've got to go back to the start to try it again," I was like, "Well, I guess this." Is what I just have to do. And if I was just able to hit a button and restart the lap when I knew I screwed up that wall, it would have been fine. But having to redo it, I was just like, I hate you so much.
I might be confusing it because I did try to do the 3-star on the first racing challenge and I got 42 seconds and that was after like 20 tries and I was like, nope.
That's
don't
it.
Screw you.
You're a lot more persistent than I am. I didn't have any patience. I actually would be in a level in a single player, like, or in the main story stuff, like in an area, and I'd like say, "Oh, this looks like a secret area," and I'd go in there and it'd be like a Riddler puzzle. I'd be like, "Nope." I just turn around and leave. Like, I wouldn't even do them. I'm like, I'll YouTube that stuff. Because I knew you have to get all of them to unlock what they're going to unlock, and I just knew that wasn't going to happen.
And I was cool with them having all that stuff in there when it was optional and you're like, hey, if you really want to get a lot of hours and a lot of value out of this game and you enjoy that stuff, cool, it's there, whatever. But yeah, that they tied all of that stuff to get the quote-unquote best ending, I was just like, oh, that's just mean.
Yeah, it, honestly, it wasn't really Like there was a lack of payoff two times over. The first one was, I mean, yeah, at least Catwoman comes and helps you fight the Riddler that last time, and she's actually kind of necessary. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, Batman and Catwoman have their little moment, and it's basically like, and this is what you mean about like Batman being wooden. I think it's twofold. I think it's the way he's written. And I do think, honestly, and this is going to get a lot of people hating me for this, but I do think it's Kevin Conroy. I don't think he's capable of playing the emotions this requires. And it's like, I mean, and I've been watching episodes of the original animated series this week lately, watching some really good ones. And I'll tell you, man, even there, he is not the most emotive person in the bunch. And I'm not just talking when he's playing Batman. Even like the you watch the Two-Face two-parter where Harvey Dent becomes Two-Face, and it's good for a children's Saturday morning cartoon, but for a role like this that requires Batman to be in pain, to be at his wit's end, to be losing compassion for the thugs that he's trying to spare, that he's losing that sense of mercy, you know, you don't get the range of emotions that you really need.
Yeah.
So he's sitting there with Catwoman, and he's supposed to still be broken up over Talia, which you get like two or three, you get like a handful of hints over through like throughout the game, but not a lot. So basically he tells, you know, Selina, he's like, no, like you're never going to see me again. Like this isn't going to happen. And brushes off Selina, which evidently knows that it's Bruce Wayne. I'm trying to remember when that happened.
Well, no, because that happened in the main plot, because you have that conversation with her.
The reveal, right?
Yeah, that's after the reveal when he's on TV as Bruce Wayne.
I got 100% before the end.
Ah, see, yeah, you know what? I bet they just wouldn't have even accounted for that possibility. And that you know,
that's an interesting thing, yeah, because yeah. I can't think of another point in which she would have been told that. Yeah.
Well, maybe it's something that happened in the comics, because these are very much based off of a lot of the comic lore when you get right down to it.
Yep.
So, I mean, but no, I mean, that moment is not really that much of a payoff, partially because for me, I don't know, like even looking back at some of the fiction that I've read, like some of the trades that I have, I'm not sure anyone really wrote Catwoman the way she should have been written. Like I feel like she should be like, I feel like Catwoman should never be the one to come on to someone. That she's a bit of a tease, but she's the one that's going to make the other person break and come on to her, kind of a thing.
Mm.
Keep it all in her power. But I mean, that really goes like, even when it comes to art, like that really goes for, I think, so many of the characters here. Like maybe if they had Paul Dini back, but they didn't bring him back, and even then, some of the prior game, like Arkham City and Arkham Asylum, even then, like there were some issues with the script for the characters. But here, I feel like there were a lot of moments, because even Two-Face, like if you listen to him talking, he tries to bring back to when he had the acid splash in his face and everything, and trying to make Batman feel guilty that, you know, he wasn't there to help then. So again, we're talking about, you know, limitations as a human being, kind of a thing. And I'm just, I don't know, like there's a lot of the script that it fails completely. I'm wondering if people would have been, like, because I know a lot of people were angry that even Poison Ivy dies, but I think, I don't know, part of me is like, hey, she died saving the city, so that's actually kind of noble. She wasn't refrigerated, technically.
Mm-hmm.
She actually, you know,
she did something, the city, and she was actually calling the shots most of the time. Like, Batman's running around just doing what she told him to do, right? And so he went and found the plants. It's so funny to me, too, and again, it's like, go get wake up this old plant, like this old tree, and everything will be great. So you do that, and then it's like, well, that's not good enough. Well, there's actually this other old tree. It's really deep, though. You got to go further. So let's go do that again
and wake it up with sonar for reasons.
That's where the Riddler trophies did get annoying, because for that and Arkham Knight HQ and a whole lot of areas, there were like trophies that would show up on the map if you beat up a thug, but until certain story points would not physically be there. And so you like, when you have to go underground for that, when you have to go into Arkham Knight HQ, there's a bunch of stuff that is not actually there, and then you have to go back and do it again, which I didn't like going through that tunnel the first time, and now you're making me do it again for some trophies?
Yeah.
So that was a bit frustrating even in that regard. No, I also think I did also want to bring up, I did like, well, it's like with an asterisk. It's like I liked Harley Quinn's DLC in some aspects. It was very short.
It took me like 15 minutes, I think.
Even if, yeah, it's like, wow, I'm glad this was a, well, kind of like, I don't know, like it's a day one bonus, that's for sure.
Yeah, it was a pre-order bonus.
Well, they say that, but I guarantee it's on even the first copies that are on the shelves.
Yeah, probably.
But it's like, there's just, it's very short, and I liked some of what they did there with the schizophrenia aspect, but damn it, I don't know if they know how to write Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, because I feel like there's an interesting character in Harley Quinn, especially to get the schizophrenia. I just imagine, because she was a doctor, you know, a psychiatrist, and it's like, okay, very intelligent woman in a very intelligent field. And the way her background's written is that she became infatuated with the Joker, but I love the idea that, like, somewhere deep down, like, Harley Quinn is the character that she suppressed her whole life or something like that. And come out, but then that's kind of how they explain Harvey Dent in the damn cartoon, is the bad Harv kind of a thing. Yeah. So I don't know, like there's stuff I think he could do with that character.
Yeah, I think in a way that Harley Quinn is Harley Quinn is the end result of what Batman is kind of fighting off throughout the game. You know, Batman is trying to keep that Joker influence from controlling him, and Harley Quinn embraced it, and then that's kind of what that looks like. When you let the Joker in, metaphorically speaking, in a way that it takes over your personality and everything else, and you let that whole ethos come into your being, and Batman is always fighting it off. But, you know, that being said, it's like you say, like, once Harley Quinn becomes a bimbo who's just kind of stupid and crazy, she's a lot less interesting because there's not a lot of nuance there.
It turns out everything she's doing in this game is not of her own free will. Like, it's basically she's doing Scarecrow a favor by breaking Poison Ivy out. So it's not even something she wants to do. And then it turns out that, what is it, Henry Adams? And that's the infected Joker people basically all coming, and they're Henry Adams is the one that tells her what to do. And she's just following someone else's orders again. She's not acting on her own. And, you know, I feel like what you just said there, I mean, the idea that she is the influence that Batman's trying to fight off, if you didn't have the literal infected right there, you could have actually had a really interesting story between Harley Quinn. And she still has reason to try and come and get revenge. I mean, and that she'd be able to break in on her own. Like, to me, that's like, I mean, that's the thing. Once she breaks it on her own, you're like, okay, I guarantee you that guy's not really not really immune. And there you go. Like, he's not really immune. It's like, you know something's up. And it's like, oh, it would be so much better if she was acting on her own instead of,
but, yeah,
you know,
she's just... And maybe in time, right? Like, that's something that could happen. Although I will say that whole arc when she is there and when his name is Henry, right? I thought that was a great turn. I actually didn't see it coming. Like, I was actually surprised when it turns out that he was infected. Although it became clear once you got close, it's like, oh shit, he's infected. And sure enough, the scene plays out and he is. I love that moment where he kills the other Jokers, which is good narratively because it means Batman doesn't have to do it. No one else has to do it. And then he looks in Batman's eyes and he's like, oh, you're going to be amazing. And then shoots himself. Yeah. Like, that is a great moment. Then Robin realizes what's going on. Like, that whole, like, boom, boom, boom. Like, that's when it's Batman is, like, that's when that game is swinging and hitting home runs. Is like when it's just, it's like the mission structure. You enter there, confined space. The narrative is tight. It all works together and it all leads to this really satisfying conclusion. And it's all self-contained in it. That snow globe of a building, basically. Everything happens in there all the way through. And it's so good.
And right down to, like you could see in the insanity, like where Batman thinks he's placed into the thing. He manages to get out. He sees the Jason Todd. He starts to get afraid. And you could see that, yeah, he's being controlled by his fears that Joker is kind of pushing. So it's like, that's a great moment where it actually helps the story a lot. Yeah, you're seeing his limitations getting out as a human being and how he's acting on his own fears, which is that he is a human. Like, he can't stop all these people from being hurt. there's only so much he as one person can do. But he, instead of relying on other people, he's going to try and protect them. And that's actually where retroactively, I feel like Arkham Origins, like, I kind of blasted Arkham Origins when I first played it because it kind of boils down to just being like, Batman learns how to work with friends and accept the help of others. But as a precursor to Arkham Knight, it actually kind of works because working with friends is what puts him in this position where so many can get hurt. So it actually kind of fits in the grand scheme of things.
Well, yeah, and Batman doesn't learn that. So, like, all the way to the
well,
end.
Well, here it, like, doesn't feel like it. Yeah,
no,
here it doesn't
really
feel
doesn't.
Like it.
And I think that, you know, I do want to talk about the end. And Jerry, I want to talk about what happens when you do all that Riddler stuff.
Yeah, no, I have no problem hearing that.
I just went on to YouTube. Like, I wasn't going to do it, and I knew someone would have recorded it.
Yeah, I'm not going to do it either. But yeah, I haven't bothered to look it up yet. But I do.
That was disappointing too. So you did all. Was it disappointing because of all the work you did to get there, or because of what it was?
Well, okay, I'm just guessing as to what the true ending was, because what I saw was, you know, after Wayne Manor blew up and Bruce Wayne clearly faked his own death, Gordon, you know, was getting ready to go to the wedding of Barbara and Tim. And as he's driving off, you see the family that is basically a recreation of Bruce and his parents wandering into an alleyway, because that's just what you do when you're a bunch of, like, rich yuppies in the city. What? Let me go through this alleyway and take a shortcut.
Especially that city.
Yeah. Especially that city. The two thugs. You're giving me a weird look. So was this not in the?
It wasn't in the YouTube stuff I looked at. So whatever you're describing is something else.
They go into the alley. The two crooks try and mug them. Yeah. This wasn't the true ending, because it's like they're basically working on mugging them. The guy's got, like, a gun to the dad's head. You know, the kid's worried. The pearls are this, like, broken, just like in, well, so many of the Batman movies. Yeah. And then all of a sudden they see a figure that looks like a scarecrow gassed version of the silhouette of Batman that just spreads out in flames, and then it's just end credits. What? And I'm just sitting, like, that last part is what I assumed was the true ending, and I'm just watching, I'm like,
I never even saw that. Like, I looked it up on YouTube, and I saw the part where, you know, he does Operation Nightfall, I think it's called, and then
he
goes and blows up.
That's the middle ending. If you do all the side stuff, but not the Riddler, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I triggered Nightfall, which,
Manor. I guess what you saw was, like, the Riddler stuff then, because I must have just seen the one if you do all the side stuff.
No, the Riddler stuff is what you need to do to get the quote-unquote true ending. And that's the thing.
That's why I was like, nah.
What I just described is not worth it.
No.
It's not worth it.
Like, the idea is that they literally just set up the origin story of Batman a second time, except now the guy who swoops down on them...
It's not even a swoop.
Like,
I don't know what it is.
It's like Batman X or something. Swoop. Like, what?
You call that a swoop? Back in my day, Batman swoop.
Well, no, it's like a burst or something. I don't know.
There's a guy above them with a thing, and
it looks like effing scarecrow gas stuff. Like, it looks like a freaking delusion. Like, I don't know. What? It's like, what the hell did they just see? I have no idea what just happened. And that's the credits. There's nothing after the credits to explain it. That's it. Unless now it's like, by the way, you got to get the true ending by beating it on nightmare mode on New Game Plus.
Or like, unless that was something where, like, Rocksteady, because they really wanted to make sure they were able to put a bow on this so they wouldn't be forced to make another one, they just went, yeah, the true ending doesn't really make a lot of sense. You know, make us write our way out of this, Warner Brothers. We dare you. Yeah.
Like, I'm after that, it's like, you know what, F it, whatever. I beat the game. I got the whatever ending. I'll find out. Because I thought, like, the big villain this time around was actually going to be Hush, based off of the one Arkham City mission that ended with, you know, Hush. It turns out that's just, like, one step mission. You go to Wayne Towers and you don't even really do anything.
It's just a throwaway thing, isn't it? Like, you talk about having, you know, we talk about some narrative arcs being way too long. Some of them, like the Harley Quinn thing in the main story, being, like, really satisfying, kind of spaced out but tight in that one area with her and how that all resolves. Then you've got Hush, which is like, oh, there's something going on. You go over there and it's like, here he is. 5 minutes, and then you're done. And it's just kind of like, really? Yeah.
Random question. Did either of you guys have a bug? Because no one else has confirmed whether they had this, but on my PS4 at least, my copy of the game, there's a bug where anytime you're indoors and there's like, especially if there's a door open or something and it's raining outside, it's raining inside.
Yes. It did that to me several times. Early on, though, later in the game, it didn't. But I had the part where you first jump into the clock tower, and I'm in the clock tower, and it's actually transitioned into the mini bat cave, and it's pouring rain inside. Like, my cape is soaked. Like, it's pouring rain on all these electronics, and I look up, and I'm like, there's a roof there. I'm like, what?
Wayne Tower. I'm in Wayne Tower, and Lucius Fox has got a soaked suit. And I'm
it's pouring rain
that's
inside.
Man, that's got to be expensive.
Yeah.
It's like, that's super.
That was a funny bug. Man. I was just looking at that, and I was just like, huh, that's an interesting one.
That's one of those things where I'm just sitting there, it's like, you guys delayed this game for a freaking year, and it's raining inside?
Yeah.
Like, you could not fix this one?
Did you guys notice, like, because the game didn't come out in October when they wanted to, so it's in the middle of summer, and they're talking about all the time about how it's Halloween, and I was like, I feel like I was 20-30% through the game before I realized they're like, it's Halloween. Like, I was like, it's Halloween? Okay. Like, It was supposed to be. Yeah, I almost wonder if they reduced the Halloween parts of it because...
Maybe, because it also seemed a bit weird, especially for how straight Scarecrow is played. Like, Scarecrow is about as cardboard as Batman in this game.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting that he's technically the same Scarecrow that in Asylum was like, yeah. It's like, how do you feel, Batman? Are you afraid? And it's like, yeah, this is the same guy. And now he's just like,
I'm going to talk to you in a very audible tone over the citywide PA system.
He had to pace himself because it was a marathon. He knew he was going to have to be managing this monologue for the next 40 hours of his life. He can't, like, be giggling the whole time as he loses his voice.
Yeah, it's true.
So, yeah, I mean, you have this very bland version of Scarecrow, which is a shame because I love the potential of Scarecrow. Everyone seems to screw him up, but
yeah,
like, you have this very bland Scarecrow.
I thought his design was good. I thought he looked great.
Oh yeah, I liked his look.
He looked friggin' terrifying.
But then, like, it's like he's very, very, like, toned down, and then all of a sudden where Robin was, you have this, like pumpkin jack-o'-lantern pattern painted there, and I'm like, what the hell? Oh yeah, I guess that would be something Scarecrow would do. Usually.
Guess so.
Like, it's, and yeah, it does seem a bit Halloween-ish, but yeah, most of the game, it's like, oh yeah, they're like, every once in a while you get a reminder because you hear one of the goons, it's like, I just want to tell you guys, this is the best Halloween ever. And it's like, some of those guys are actually my favorite. And one that I actually felt a little bad about, but I still think was funny was, after Poison Ivy does die, someone's like, Poison Ivy sacrificed herself for the whole city? Sell out.
Yeah, was like, that was a good one. Yeah.
Some of them were pretty good. Some of them were pretty good. I did like.
I heard a couple that were really funny. It was like, I hope we, you know, I hope we manage to get the city taken over tonight. I have to watch the kids tomorrow.
Yes, that was a good one.
I was like, that's hilarious. I'm like, I'll give you that. That's cool.
But all right, I think the last thing, because I mentioned it briefly a little bit at the very start of this, but I think the last thing I want to touch on before we wrap up is Oracle, again, like, bringing her up. I do think they shot themselves in the foot twice because, again, like, I liked how, I mean, not even making excuses for the developers, if you want to be pragmatic, which of Batman's, like, friends do you actually know? I think Lucius Fox would probably be easier to kidnap, or Alfred. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't even pragmatically make sense, but even then, like, okay, Oracle makes sense because she has the it's terrible to say, but she has the least amount of tools available to fight back than, like, Tim Drake and Dick Grayson, who have full use of their legs.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, even then, when they have her in the APC, she still manages to, like, crash that thing. She still shows, you know, some level of, like, I'm going to be badass. And they break out of the APC, she's taken, and then, yeah, it feels very lame when she dies because it feels like, okay, you've proven yourself to be resourceful, and all you're going to do is grab a gun, shoot twice, and then shoot yourself in the head. And my brother brought up a good point when I was complaining about this to him, which is, I've never been on a hallucinogenic drug, so maybe that really is what you would do in that situation. I don't know, but it just felt very anticlimactic. It felt very, okay, we got to get through this character's death, and then we can move on.
Yes, yeah, Batman's I don't see. Hurt. That's He's, the thing. Like they do the cloud burst. I don't see anybody else killing themselves. Everybody else is beating the shit out of each other. Like I'm yeah. not sure why it is that like sometimes you just want to kill yourself, and sometimes. I don't know. Like, I don't yeah. know what that is. Like, and like, it's again, like that, that's more just hand wavy stuff because it's going to be convenient for the plot. So it needs to happen this way. That's the nice thing about the fear gas. It can make you terrified. It can make you kill yourself or it can make you really violent depending on what the story calls for. So what it's not trying to be yeah. internally logic, you know, logical.
And then you have, but then you, that's the thing. It's like, okay, she's dead. So she die, well, theoretically dies, and then Poison Ivy dies. You start to feel like, okay, there's some gravitas here. You know, this really is
The sweet gravitas born out of women murdered, killing themselves, or in danger in some
hey,
form.
Hey, I'd have felt the same way if they killed Tim Drake, okay?
Yeah, I guess so. But,
I mean, no, I mean, you're right. It is unfortunate in that regard, but it's like, it's like there's at least some level of fucking gravitas. And then it's like it turns out Oracle's alive, and then Gordon's just like, okay, Batman, I forgive you. You know, yeah, he shoots him in the chest, but it's someplace non-fatal. Like, it's like, okay, we're on the same side again.
Well, I just like the way Oracle's like, I can't believe you killed Batman. It's like, lady, like, really? My Batman's been shot, like, 20 yeah. times in a fist fight. Like, one bullet to the chest.
That is a pea shooter compared to all the
where they
guns
keep saying over and over again, if you shoot him in the chest, it's not going to work. That's how he gets you. And that's where he shoots him. So that part was, I mean, you're playing Batman, so obviously it wasn't a surprise, but... yeah. But you know, like it's just, yeah. There's some great beats. There's some great moments. It's just Batman. It's not consistent or cohesive. Ultimately,
that's the thing. I loved that moment, but in the end, it's like all of a sudden, it's like I don't buy that this like there's much on the line anymore.
Yeah.
And I think that's again where they shot themselves in the foot twice because they took it back. They're like, oh no, we didn't really go there. And it's like, on one hand, I'm glad. On the other hand, it's like, well, now it's just another Batman.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I would have felt more. I would have been more interested in a way if, say, not because of Batman, not from Batman's own hand, but you know, often one or two villains. Like, let's make this the final story. Let's really make this the final story. And not just Poison Ivy, but, like, Penguin or Two-Face or somebody. Like, let one of them just completely bite it. Like, to me, that would have made things just, again, the stakes were higher.
Arkham City ended as a bloodbath. I mean, you had the deaths of Hugo Strange. You had the death of Talia al Ghul. You had the death of the Joker. And, theoretically, the death of Ra's al Ghul. I'm not sure. Because they kind of hint that he's not actually dead because Lazarus Pits, but I mean, you had like at the very least those three characters dead, and I might have actually forgotten some. And so you follow up with that, like Arkham City, which had that kind of, you know, just end there. And now here it's like, and that's the thing, it's like death should not be what gives a story weight necessarily, but it helps give you a sense of scale, especially if it's like, we're trying to drive Batman to his limitations, and you get the idea this is supposed to be a dark story, but then it's like at the very end, you just feel like, okay, it's just another Batman story, except then at the very end, and the very end is where it really does do its best stuff. I mean, even that part with, you know, once Scarecrow reveals his plan and everything, it's like, oh, you know, that feels like proper Scarecrow plan and everything. It feels real good. And you have the whole Joker illusions and everything, and they work out really well. But it feels like they really took a lot of shortcuts where, I don't know, it's like they were afraid of who they could kill, because in some ways it's like, you know what? I was expecting Jim Gordon to die, actually. And that's a death that in some ways you could make impactful, it could make sense, because it's Jim Gordon. He's not a mask. He's not a vigilante. He's not someone doing this stuff. He has always been a law-abiding policeman. He's always been lawful good, and for him to be lost would be tragic.
Mm-hmm.
But, mm-hmm. I mean, it all depends. I mean, we could all sit here telling them what they could have written till the cows come home. It's what they have, I mean, again, it's got the elements of a good story. It's quite jumbled. I do wonder if Paul Dini might have been able to help him with that or what, but they didn't have him on board this time. And, I mean, I'm not even sure necessarily what he did with Asylum and City outside of writing dialogue. So.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I enjoyed the game. I really enjoyed the open world elements. And, I mean, in the end, it's like I'll probably play it again. But I think my favorite of the Batman games really is still Arkham Asylum.
Yeah, me too. Arkham Asylum is the first and maybe only game that I played to the end and immediately played through to the end again, back to back, with no gap in between plays or anything, which I've never done since. Because I mean, it's got the power of being something new and novel in that combat system and everything else. Like it had that chance to get real old hat. I will not play this Batman or any other Batman game again. Like I didn't even think I was going to play this one until I saw the reviews, and I was like, okay.
All right, fine.
I'm not ready to dip into that well unless I've got a good sense of that they're doing something different. Because even that, I've never been a fan of the art style. The style of Batman they do, that kind of boxy, Unreal Engine kind of way they present everybody, it's never really worked for me.
I made a joke about the Batgirl DLC when someone pointed out Harley Quinn dressed in what looks like PVC or latex, and I was like, oh no, that's just the Unreal Engine.
Oh, everything, yeah.
Even yeah, it's true.
Like that.
Unreal Shine.
Yeah, oh my
but
God.
No, it's very clear that she's wearing some kind of weird...
Yeah.
I don't know.
Polymer, yeah. Yeah, I would tend to agree. I'm not in a rush to get back in. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I'd agree with what you guys said too. I still think Asylum is the best, mostly just because, and we talked about this before, because it's a more focused experience. I think that not that Rocksteady is incapable of doing a good open world, because that's not the case. But I think they are definitely at their best when they have limitations in terms of scope. And I mean, big open world stuff is kind of the kind of the current trend in large gaming like that. So it's kind of was a natural evolution for this. But yeah, when they have a more tight focus, that's clearly where they do their best work, I think. So I hope whatever game they do next, it at least doesn't start as a large open world and can be a little bit more contained. I think that'd be better.
Yeah, for me, when it comes down to it, I think I'll replay Arkham City for the story. I'll replay this for the open world, and then I'll replay Arkham Asylum because it's Arkham Asylum. I'll replay it for everything in the future when I get time. Arkham Origins, I kind of want to replay again just to see if I gave it a bad shake. Because, I mean, it turned out I did that with Bayonetta. I gave Bayonetta an unfair analysis when I first played it, and then I played Bayonetta again, and I played Bayonetta 2 on Wii U, and I was like, holy crap, I was completely wrong about this game.
That's a boss move right there, to give it another shake and realize how wrong you were.
Well, that's the thing.
Bayonetta's freaking amazing.
I was completely confused because I was excited for Bayonetta 2. I ended up playing the games again on the Wii U, and I'm like, why do I like it now? And I read back, I looked back, I read my old review, and I was like, wow, I was completely not getting it. So yeah, I mean, I like to be the kind of person that can say when they were wrong. So I might have been wrong about Arkham Origins in a lot of ways. I mean, I will say Arkham Origins did the Riddler stuff way better than Arkham City did. But as for what Rocksteady does next, there's already rumors going around that the Origins developer WB Montreal is possibly working on a Superman game. I don't know. Like, I feel like there's a lot of things they could do. I kind of would love to see a Birds of Prey game by Rocksteady, as long as they got, I don't know, maybe get a woman writer on board. Maybe that would help. You know, get a woman to write that story. But, like, maybe a Birds of Prey game, or just, you know, move on to other DC. I mean, someone pointed out, you know, like, you take Fetch from Infamous First Light, make that, do a game like that, but with the Flash. I think that could work really well. So
yeah, how would
be interesting? Yeah,
I mean, would if you're doing a Flash game, would Flash basically be bullet time, or like how would you get that across? I wonder.
Did you get to play Infamous First Light?
No. Oh, Infamous. Yeah, of course. Yeah, I played Infamous. Yeah, yeah.
First Light though, the one where you play as the chick, yes. Fetch.
Yeah.
I did not play that. No.
That was the sort of stand expand alone for that one. And
I think I got that through PlayStation Plus, but I haven't. I haven't actually played it.
Well, if you really want to know, that's basically a good way you could do it. Well, I mean, her powers are basically the neon powers that Delson had, just turned up.
They're amped up, yeah. And she can move. Much better she than can move Delson extremely did. Fast and things like that. And it works very well, actually.
So something like that.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think really what everybody's clamoring for is a good Aquaman game. If we can get ourselves a good Aquaman game, then you guys, so that's a world beater.
Hey, if anyone can make a good Aquaman game, I think Rocksteady can. Actually, I don't know.
I don't know
enough about Aquaman, actually.
Okay, I think Green Lantern would actually be kind of interesting, you know, as far as just abilities and learning to harness your abilities so you could unlock things over time. I think that something like that could be interesting, but yeah, so hard to say.
Yeah. But we'll see. WB could actually always want to move them over to something. I mean, who knows? Maybe they'll try and revive. Maybe they'll try and revive Terminator through video games. We never know.
If Rocksteady was able to take the terrible Batman games and actually come out with something good, they might be able to do the same for Terminator. Anything's possible.
Yeah.
And actually, you know what? Because what I loved about the Batman games is it felt like they really thought about what it means to be Batman and build a game around that rather than trying to strong-arm Batman into a certain genre.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'd love them to do that again with whatever property. Instead of saying, let's strong-arm it to an existing kind of game that already, you know, we have already, let's think about what that character does and build a game around that. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, like Aquaman. You play it underwater. People love swimming in video games. It's a perfect fit.
Oh, yeah, man. People love swimming levels in games.
It's true.
It can't go wrong.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much, guys, for joining me on this conversation. It was really good. I really enjoyed being able to discuss all of this stuff.
Yeah.
So, again, Jerry, thank you for thanking me as usual. And, Sean, thanks for joining us.
Pleasure. Thanks for the amazing work you do on Gamers with Jobs. It's really great I could finally get on over here, too.
Thank you. Thank you very much. All right, so anyone that's stuck around, just remember, check out www.gamerswithjobs.com and always be sure to check out the conference call, which this week was mysteriously lacking in Andrich.
Yeah, I had some stuff going on, so I had to bow out of that one.
But, no, check that out. Check out geekbravado.com, where you'll find all kinds of stuff from Jerry. And, almost forgot, go to vgmetal.com for more Power Glove, even though the website hasn't updated in a while, because they will have done the Batman heavy metal theme song variant that we'll be using for this podcast. So, thank you very much, everyone, and have a good night.
Take care, guys.